advance in technology, of course, we just want to ensure we have your name here. Is this Dr. Yona Saletti? Yes, you're up here now. Sorry, I know at one point you were down there, yes. Chief Director in the National Indigenous Knowledge Systems Office. Mr. Tom, unfortunately, as I say, is this, perhaps you could just pronounce this?
Yes, Chairperson, it's Tom Sukhanandan.
Sukhanandan. Ah, now I can see that. Mr. Tom Sukhanandan, Director, National Indigenous Knowledge Systems Office, Nondipa Inchinsa. With a G. G at the end, yeah, Inchinga. Assistant Director, standing in for the Parliamentary Officer. Is that correct? So that's the team, is it? And of course, we still have with us the DDG here, Ms. Lordwe Antony, and also we have her colleague who also was with us in the previous experience. So thank you very, very much for being here. That was Nomfundo, I think. Am I correct, Masetti, Chief Director? We, of course, there are many others here. And I didn't find any constituents from Labour, you know, from NEDLAC to remain with us. Now, members, just to give a clear indication of how this is moving, we it's now about 12:25, and it's just as well that we've really got essentially one item. And the reason for that is that, as members who had gone to Geneva know, we had realized the need for a revised program, and we'd like to share that kind of information with you, just for concept, and move forward there. So I have requested, really, that the DTI, the department, at this moment in time, we've got many other opportunities, I think, to come in at length. But you're very welcome, DDG, to comment in terms of what is really a sharing, just a briefing. That's all it is. It's not going to be an opportunity for interrogation, but clarification of any points that may arise. I think you do know that we also have with us the whip on, in science and technology, the Honourable Dumjwa. Thank you.
Honourable Chair, Honourable Members of the Committee, we are thankful for granting us this opportunity to come and share with you some of the underpinning principles that we've been operating from. And right from the beginning, I think it is important to state that as members of the same government, we work in complementarity with the DTI. So it is important to note that we have contributed to the work, we are in dialogue with them, we are also members of the same delegation to the Intellectual World Property Organization. So those are important, I think, underpinnings for us to stress. So we work in complementarity. The probably just a couple of background points is that the National Indigenous Knowledge Systems Office was established in 2006, and it arises out of the IKS policy of 2004. That policy of 2004, all the intellectual property writings, chapters, and whatever it was, came from the DTI. So in terms of the policy, it also brings government together in that. So that, I think those are important underpinnings to stress that we work in complementarity. We've worked as a team as such. There are four probably drivers of this policy. There is the social cohesion and affirmation. which the Department of Arts and Culture leads under the IKS policy. The second one is on the provision of IKS-based services under the IKS policy that is being led by the Department of Health. And then we have the issue of matters relating to commerce and trade, and to that, the Department of Trade and Industry, as they have been doing this morning, provide the lead. Now, the Department of Science and Technology has the responsibility of managing the interfacing of indigenous knowledge systems with other knowledge systems. So under this, the mandate of the DST, as we all know, is in research, development, and innovation. So our work and our contribution in this direction, therefore, falls within that broad mandate. Under this broad mandate of the DST, the National Indigenous Systems Office has taken three major directions. One is advocacy and policy development, under which we then look at how do we equip the public around awareness of the wealth that lies in their society. How do we begin to educate them about their rights in terms of that knowledge which they have? And how do we expose them to issues of intellectual property rights? We have chosen two major vehicles. One is to begin to tackle that at the youth level. When the children are still young, we use the National Science Week campaigns. IKS is one of the three major pillars of that campaign. So we reach out to the young people to educate them about the significance of indigenous knowledge in that direction. Currently, in Devon, there is an IKS Expo, which brings together knowledge holders, different communities of practice, such as healers, farmers, together, and also people who are in bioprospecting in universities, science councils, and also traders in these materials. So the aim is to reach out to them as well. So to this extent, our audience that we are addressing ranges from children in schools to knowledge holders. So we have a broader mandate than looking at only the commercial side of it. So it's important just to stress that issue. It is in this regard, at the policy level, that we participate in the national forums such as this one, but also at an international level, to in the WIPO processes. I must say we've also provided some more help in the Biodiversity Convention. We have drafted some of the national legislation that the Department of Environmental Affairs has championed in international fora. So to a certain extent, we feel that the work at WIPO, because Honorable Murray referred to the African group position. Just to maybe a quick update on that. The negotiating positions that are used by the African group, 3 years ago were drafted here in Devon. We provided the leadership in terms of the African, the AU activities. We updated that framework in May this year in Geneva under the auspices of the African Union. So the documents that are being tabled as African group documents, I chair the one on traditional knowledge, my colleague Tom drove the one on biological resources. So we're very integrated in the work of the African Union at WIPO. And we have also built up relationships with the like-minded groupings. And all those that are sympathetic to a development of a sui generis legislation, we have built up that relationship and a network to building a consensus at WIPO. So to a large extent, the success of the developing countries at WIPO that have emerged is because we've provided that leadership at WIPO in building consensus of like-minded people to move towards a position where we can then counter the stronger nation in terms of that. And we succeeded in May in getting a lot of agreement on the table as a result of such networking. So we definitely, as a country, and I must say that in December, that delegation was led by DBG Zondwa Ntuli. So we are actually directly working together. Having done that, I won't spend as much time on that background. I thought I should just link in with what the honorable members had raised. We're involved in knowledge development, which means that our concern is the protection of the knowledge, because we are at the knowledge economy, and how do we do that? So to a certain extent, we have set up research chairs, two research chairs at the moment, one on traditional medicine, one on general knowledge, a center of excellence at the universities of Limpopo, Venda, and Northwest to gather this information, to begin to streamline it into research. How do we make indigenous knowledge part of this research agenda? So to that extent, our concerns and our needs for the protection of indigenous knowledge is not just a question of commercial in the arena of knowledge production. The arena of taking that which we have already and how do we innovate it further to contribute to the economy of the country, to contribute to the moral and social development of the country, which is not commercial. These are broad issues the knowledge. So to that extent, we are pushing through that. We are happy to notify the House that together with other departments, we've developed very good legal documents, such as material transfer agreements, so that as a nation, we have a document, a contractual document between power prospectors and the knowledge holders. We have a second instrument that we have developed with a civil society, natural justice, which is biocultural protocol. And the idea is to begin to look at communities beginning to protect their own knowledge. Protection of their own knowledge is being aware of what you have and being in a position to exercise your rights. It's not merely a legal issue. It has to involve many other issues. So we are moving in that direction. I will later on share with you the knowledge management strategy that we've put in place. We have a concept which is in the policy of a national record system. And we want to make a bit of distinction between the databases, which focuses on knowledge that is in the public sphere, and also how do we handle oral knowledge, which most of our communities have, which is not in the public domain. So we'll talk to that. So I'll quickly just raise a few issues here, and I think the spirit in which we're doing this is to complement the work that our colleagues are doing, is to re-enrich the work which our colleagues are doing, and we take cognizance of the advice that these are complex issues and therefore we cannot rush them into definitions. We identify the areas in which our colleagues are making great strides. It is important that there must be something in place to regulate trade and commerce, and we acknowledge that this is an arena in which they play an important role. And we support every effort of integrating concepts that are derived at the general discussion on the protection of indigenous knowledge into the legal framework, such as benefit sharing, prior informed consent, and the like. We also recognize that it is quite a complex issue to look at the ownership of indigenous knowledge, but they've done well by championing collective ownership of indigenous knowledge, shifting it from the conventional IP, which tends to rest on individuals. And we acknowledge those contributions that they're making. And also, it is important, we appreciate greatly that they're dealing with the IKS that is in the public domain, and the legislation focuses on that. There are nuances, of course, which we want to stress on the, that knowledge, especially in databases, and how we should actually develop a policy on the protection of the knowledge in the database, rather than just the protection of databases. How do we transcend that? Then we will also have some few comments to make on the National Trust. Thank you very much. I will not read every line of this presentation because we do not have the time, and I think that the gist of this gathering is not to focus on the detail, but rather principles. We feel that in the issue of the protection of indigenous knowledge, the law has taken good care of the commerce, but the moral rights of the people needs to be taken care of. And that's what the law that is on the table does not do adequately. We are of the belief that our colleagues did concede, conservation and preservation could be handled maybe in a different way. In addition to those issues, there are also rights, moral rights of society. And we think that more comprehensive law, which is a sui generis law, will take care of that. So we really do take pains to explain this, that we are not contradicting what they are saying. We are complementing what they are doing in terms of the other areas that are not covered. I'll move on. This is really the question of intellectual property rights versus probably alternative legislation. The conventional intellectual property regime, as they stand now, and as much as they can be implemented, all of them put together, they are not addressed comprehensively the issue of the protection of indigenous knowledge. By the fact that these intellectual property rights, for the purposes for which they were set up for commerce and trade, and some of it for research. And so it is important to see the limitation of that. Arising out of that, there is also an issue which has been addressed in the NEDLAC document and discussed, is the period of protection of indigenous knowledge. We are of the opinion, and we've heard this from a lot of people, and there are legal arguments around it, that it should be for perpetuity rather than the 10-year for trademark and 20-year for patent. This needs to be in perpetuity around that. And it's a complex issue, but we have quite, I think, gathered sufficient international opinion on that. There is a problem as well in terms of this bill that it addresses issues from 1958. What happened then to the knowledge before then? And we believe that by addressing the issue in the and including the condition of perpetuity, we could address that. The debate between traditional works, I think this has been raised, but we just want to point out that it requires much more thinking and work in terms of the definition. And I think that the point at this stage is to flag that issue. Every one of you has a presentation, so there are some points around that. The Honorable Member of the DST Portfolio Committee raised issues of transborder nature of indigenous knowledge, and we feel that it's an important area that needs to be addressed because communities exist across the borders. So do biological resources across the borders. And so do trade networks go across borders. So it's an important arena that needs to be addressed in this area. We do not feel that it could be left only to amendments that probably could be left at the executive. It must be in law. The issue of national treatment could also be looked at. That we do not
think that reciprocity, reciprocal agreements, would be the route that we would support. We think that national treatment is better because it does not depend on changing environment, but as a legal concept, it's well established. The National Council, probably we may be outdated here because I think that there have been addresses, issues that have been looked at that we haven't clearly analyzed the document, but the issues that we are raising is that we were unclear as to how the 12 people or 12 person council will remedy the failure to identify communities as beneficiaries. We also feel that the council responsibilities, that we are concerned that giving the council the responsibility of collecting societies is rather confusing. We are also concerned that the structure and responsibilities needs to be looked at again. The and it must be, I think, be seen very clearly that we would want to be supportive to the Department of Trade and Industry because there is a vacuum. There is nobody that can exercise this kind of rights. So to that extent, we feel that this is an important move. This debate has been going on. In the document itself, there is slippage, or that's academic language, between TK and IK. I think we need to be very clear on where we're going. As a country, probably with a policy on IKS, and the department was contributor to that, should we probably focus on a particular usage, not the continued flow between traditional knowledge and indigenous knowledge? There's need for guidance around that. But we are conscious that even at ministerial level, at cabinet level, this has been debated extensively. So we'll wait for guidance probably at that level, but it's an issue that has reached the highest level of the trust fund. There is a proliferation of trust funds. Chair, the Department of Science and Technology needs policy. There is a fund in there. The Department of Environmental Affairs, in their biodiversity regulations, there is also a fund in there, and there is a fund as well. But we are addressing the same community, but being driven by the... So this is where your advice, that we need to put ourselves together, work together, and find an appropriate formula for these kind of things is important. Otherwise, we will confuse the different stakeholders, whether they are knowledge holders or business communities or researchers. We need to actually look into this trust fund for intellectual property. And I think that is a sufficient point to make. I'll move on. On the issue of databases have been used as a trump card in the WIPO negotiations at the IGC because it's an easy way for bioprospectors to get their information for free. The example that was being given earlier on by the member of the DST portfolio committee is an example. You get this information, it's been published, and it's in databases, or it's in books. How do you handle that? We feel that this issue, if it's not properly handled, could expose our knowledge to a level of exploitation where the benefits may not accrue to us. So to that extent, we have initiated with the Human Science Research Council a development of a policy on the protection of databases so that it does not just look at the scientific way of putting a database together, but rather the content and how do we protect that content. So we should be reporting soon on that policy and so that we can then share it with our colleagues. In terms of how we will use that to protect indigenous knowledge. Around the same issue, we feel that the department has been pursuing the national recorder system. that the focus should not only be on the knowledge in the public domain, knowledge that has been published, knowledge that's in databases, but we should also collect, harvest, and protect the oral form of indigenous knowledge. And hence the national record system, which is being developed with the cooperation of Meraka Institute at the Council for Scientific and Industrial Research. It's already underway. We're not issuing statements of promising. It's already underway. The six sites have been chosen under which it will be piloted, and so we are moving with this. But it is important that we do look at the objectives why we are setting up these databases, why we are setting up the national record system. The objectives reflect how you construct that system. So we feel that in the bill, the definition of databases is rather limited, does not provide sufficient flexibility for future developments of a sui generis legislation. So there should be an opening up around that. This is just an example of the thinking. This system is complex. When you look at metadata system and taxonomies, you actually begin to move beyond simple concerns, or rather, let me rephrase the phrase, we move beyond concerns of an academic definition of indigenous knowledge or traditional knowledge. It actually embraces issues of communities of practice. How do you define then communities of practice? Is this an ethnic group? Is it by a profession in traditional medicine, or is it a bigger community of practice? And to that extent, in addition to looking at the questions of that, we have started an accreditation and certification framework to define these concepts so that the communities of practice can begin to certify themselves, identify themselves. To that extent, I think we're making progress. And you could, maybe just to explain, we are looking at the centralized database, which would link up all databases. We did an audit in 2007 by KPMG, so we know where these databases are located. So we are putting them together under one framework on indigenous knowledge. So to that extent, we need to find ourselves between the DTI and ourselves. We can have a replication of databases for one government. So we need to find a way in which we create one database as communities that are involved in that. It is a decentralized system. It's a different concept, Madam Chairman. A decentralized concept undertakes to recognize communities as owners of their knowledge and therefore custodians of that knowledge. So if this distributed system is around the country, the owners of knowledge have been articulating that they don't want that knowledge to be taken away. How do you assure them that they control that knowledge? So we hope that we'll build up servers around the country that will be linked to mirror sites where it can be protected in case one system fails. That maybe on a 24-hour service, it will be synchronized to protect what is being collected. So I thought that it's important just for us to indicate the complexity of the issues of databases around this issue. I think it's the same point, therefore clarity of the objectives, functionalities, and technical specifications are important. It's the same issue of the indigenous community, indeed. These definitions across, even if we go into sociology, what is a community? We will spend all our time here. So we need to find a way, as a government, how do we define this? Now, for example, the legal precedents that are being used. In December, there was a revocation of the Pelagonium patent. Now, in that revocation, they had to define which communities are making that claim. Now, if you look at the San communities and the Wadia, there is also a precedence in defining what that community is. So I think that it is important to explore the different criteria that are being used to define what the community, rather than have a fixed definition, have a flexible definition that can allow for the law to develop differently. So I think that would be our input on that. We have commented on that, and maybe this is the last slide. When all has been said, we have been advised by our leaders, beginning with Minister Mangena when he was in office, and then Minister Pando, to support the processes of our colleagues at DTI before we table our process of a sui generis. And probably it may not be necessary if we incorporate issues of moral rights and scientific research from indigenous knowledge in what they are doing in terms of doing that. But we are very grateful for the work that they've done. We are supportive of what they're doing, and therefore we have allowed ourselves to wait until this process is completed. And we are members of their discussion group, so if there's anything that we need to do, we will definitely be in touch with our colleagues. Probably on the issues, a lot of issues were raised on biodiversity. Could maybe, if you allow, Chair, give over to Mr. Tom Sukanandan just to mention a couple of items, because he's the one who is very close with those issues of environmental and genetic resources protection.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to respond to a number of questions that were raised on the floor regarding the issues around biodiversity. And my colleague from the DTI was rightfully did mention that the issues of biodiversity resides within the Department of Environmental Affairs in terms of the Biodiversity Act. And in 2009, the regulations of the Biodiversity Act were promulgated, which allowed for issues of access and benefit sharing and prior informed consent. But the issue that was raised from the floor was, what happens if I do have monographs or I do have samples? The issue in terms of registration, the applicant or the researcher has to apply for a access and benefit sharing agreement, because to access any biodiversity you need to have a permit, and one of the requirements for a permit is an access and benefit sharing agreement. So in terms of that, the biodiversity does not fall within the ambit of the current amendments. There's a separate legislation that actually deals with the issue of biodiversity. That was the first question. Then the other question that was raised is, what happens if an individual in Mozambique accesses that biodiversity. In terms of the Convention of Biodiversity, South Africa, Mozambique are signatories or have ratified the CBD. So in terms of the requirement, the applicant, which is, you call it the source provider, and the user and the provider. So the user has to apply for a certificate, and that certificate comes from the origin. So, for example, if Hoodia is endemic in South Africa, so this South Africa becomes the country of origin. But, for example, if Hoodia is grown in Lesotho, and Lesotho is not the country of origin, it becomes the country of source. So you have a difference between country of origin and country of source. And this is in alignment with international international requirements of disclosure of origin. For example, if the applicant in either the EPO or the U.S. Patent Office, they have to disclose the country of origin for a patent application. That is in terms of the two questions that were raised from the floor. Chair, just whilst I have the floor, I just want to just quickly just refer to some of the questions that were raised by other members of Parliament regarding the issue of public domain. The issue of public domain is that we need to be very clear that the current intellectual property rights regime is totally different from the indigenous knowledge systems. We have two separate trying to marry the two systems, we are going to have a problem in terms of the patent. If you look at public domain patent, the criteria for patent is novel. Indigenous knowledge is not novel. So in terms of novelty, it will fail. In terms of copyright, in terms of the criteria for copyright, it you need to be original. So that will fail in that. So in terms of the distinct two tools, the patent tool and the copyright tool, your public domain aspect will fail. The issue of retrospectivity, the amendments are not creating new rights for indigenous community. They are only affirming rights which existed in time immemorial. So the issue of retrospectivity will fall off if you look at in terms of the affirmation of these rights. The amendments have never created new rights. They only affirmed existing rights. The other issues of criteria. Yeah, in terms of definitions, if you look at your current in intellectual property right definitions, your patent laws don't define precisely what invention is. If you look at trademarks, your trademark laws don't define what a sign is. So what we're proposing is that we need not necessarily be locked in terms of fixed definition, but we need to have criteria that would satisfy the conditions of protection.
Okay. I certainly wish to thank you both, Dr. Saletti and your colleague, Tom, for their input here, and just check with DTI, the DDG here, if she would like to comment on anything at this point. No. Members, this is really a sharing of information, as it were, and needs to be understood in that manner. So if there's some form of clarity that you would like, let's try and get that. Thank you. We have the Honourable Mabasa here, the Honourable Murray, and the Honourable Smith.
Thanks, Comrade Chair, and thanks for the inputs and greetings to all who are present here. My question is, it relates more on consultation. That says, the mere fact that we're talking of knowledge and we're talking of indigenous knowledge and we're talking of discoveries, it does send us to times immemorial, in addition to present times. But it also widens the scope within which we are supposed to act, research, and acquire information. And it also challenges us to interact with people who are not necessarily used to be at one with Parliament, you know, people who by nature, because Parliament by nature, to people like South Africans, there are some people to whom Parliament by nature is a very distant organ. So that if no efforts are consciously made to target and find those people that naturally find Parliament to be distant, then you may find that come out with an act which has excluded such people. It's not their duty to come to make inputs, but it is our duty to go and find them and persuade them to make inputs. I'm talking for an example that I will give here will be traditional healers. Because they are also also falling in that arena of making discoveries and also protecting what they believe is their knowledge. And amongst themselves, they differ on that. One will say, no, I have discovered this. The other one will have discovered this. So that for that challenge to be synchronized and for that protection to be given where it is warranted, how what efforts have been made. Thanks, Comrade Chair.
Thank you, Chair. My compliments to the Department of Science and Technology. I think they've listed a lot of things. I think things that we can probably associate with it, we have identified, and so it is really, it's really refreshing, I must admit. I think the challenges that you've mentioned about communities and indigenous, and, you know, I also agree that one should probably be more flexible, because, I mean, you've used a simplistic example of the Sun community. These days, it's only a small group that you can identify as pure Sun anymore. You know, people have migrated so much between population groups. I always use the might sound extreme example, but it's happening in South Africa. A little Funamariki whose mother is black and his father is white. You know, so suddenly you get communities that are not purely identified in a traditional way or in a historical way. So clearly you must have flexibility in terms of those definitions. And also in terms of traditional knowledge or indigenous knowledge. And I think there's also a difference because, I mean, you find white Tsongomas these days. So you know, these things are, and I think the way that our children grow up is that sometimes, you know, it is impossible for them to make their definition of communities, of who belongs to which community. I mean, they don't live in that area anymore, and I think that is just going to make it more difficult. So, quite clearly, you know, you need that more flexibility. But otherwise, compliments to what you've done so far. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. Just two quick ones. The second presenter was talking about the bill doesn't create rights. It merely affirms rights which have existed since the time immemorial. But yet, the PowerPoint on one of the slides, the second page, in fact, says the bill only applies to recent indigenous knowledge, and indigenous knowledge in possession before 1958 will have no benefit for indigenous existing prior to this date. Can somebody clarify that statement and also link it to the statement made that these rights are in a memorial? And then secondly, there seems to be, on the one hand, the department's are affirming the support for DTI on this program, but the CC and undercurrent throughout the presentation that a sui generis approach would be better. And you see that there's even talk about it being, you know, coming down the road, and then they list the pros versus the cons. One almost gets the feeling that the one department is saying, okay, look, we'll go along with this approach for now, but it doesn't really make much sense. Because, I mean, they even talk about the existing four statutes are being amended, in fact, not designed to protect the same thing anyway. You know, there's no novelty, originality, and so on and so forth. So is it really a case of one department, look, they're not going to say anything different, I suppose, but it does seem to me, I can't ask them, do they really support it, but it does seem to me that the one department is really suggesting that one should start de novo and come up with some freestanding legislation, and if that's the case, it would seem to make a lot of sense to me, but anyway.
Was that a comment more than the request for a clarification? Because, more in the nature of a kind of preamble, right? So I think that's it then, right, looking around. Yes, thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. As I've been listening the whole day today, from the first presentation by NECLEC and then the presentation by the Department of Science and Technology. What comes to my mind, Chair, is that we are seated here discussing issues that and matters that are affecting the majority of our people, who some of them, unfortunately, not because of their own making, are illiterate. I'm saying not because of their own making, and some of these issues that are being discussed here are affecting them, and they are expected to participate in those processes. I hear the Department of Science and Technology, which I commend the program, that they'll have some science weeks in some areas. Would you not consider, as the department, of working together with the Department of Basic Education in empowering the generation, but also ensure that, you know, I always make this example that children are taught IT at school and this, but it's forgotten about the parents that are to supervise those children in the homework on technology. There is no process. I was born before technology, but my granddaughter and my younger children are expecting technology. I'm expected. Nobody is then thinking that how best then to ensure that you empower the older generation. And I'm raising this because I wouldn't like to, I don't think all of us here as members of parliament that would like to leave a legacy of when we go back to our communities, we ask ourselves, but we were in the administration for X number of terms, and what is it that we have left, and what is it that we have done for our people? So I am trying to move away a little bit from the academic and the technical side of it, but coming within the context. I'm raising this because the President of the Republic said, how then to make the Parliament an activism Parliament? And in my view, for us to be able to do that is that we ensure that we empower people for them to understand what is it, what is this that has got, what the impact of this. We were talking initially with the interpretation of the indigenous knowledge, what is it meant. I went outside, I went to a computer, I got quite an interesting interpretation, which I do think that I will share that with NEDLAC. I hear that also DTI is also interested in that. So for me, Chair, it's that comment, because it's really about, it's about the ordinary people who this is to ensure that it changes social conditions of their lives. So I thought that in just listening to such an informative and interesting subject, but I'm sitting here, I'm wondering that how many of the people really understand this. I will ensure that they understand in a simplest language. Simple. Thank you, Chair.
I think that really captures a lot of the challenges we are facing. I see the Honourable Kwabasa has also just raised a hand, and that'll be our final one. Thank you.
Thanks, Chairperson. I also want to express my appreciation to the Department of Science and Technology for this presentation. Chair, the one thing that we seem not to be emphasizing, and perhaps to an extent missing, is the whole area of the development agenda of this intellectual property discussion, including traditional or indigenous knowledge protection. And therefore, I'd like to see a lot more, or to hear a lot more of that, so that we speak to the whole question of the social, economic, and cultural empowerment of our communities, so that we don't get into a rather unfortunate situation of creating an impression that we are suggesting individuals in communities are going to benefit. And therefore the question of we must carefully thread this question of the mother being this race and the father being the other race, and therefore the child being in the middle and whether he benefits or not. I'm just quoting that, taking it from Honorable Mare here, but I'm not specifically, you know, directing that to him. I'm saying let's talk to the development agenda of this debate so that we are clear. We are not talking about individuals. Probably, to an extent, there will be individuals benefiting, but largely we are talking to communities benefiting. And we are talking not about the rents and cents necessarily going to be divided among members of the community, but probably we are talking to the question of developmental projects being, you know, yes, done in the communities by this national trust we are talking about as a benefit instead of, you know, the individuals involved.
Yes, I think that in essence, that has captured a lot of the underlying thread that is challenging this community. And I do believe some of the points added to right now by yourself, Dr. Saliti, and your colleague, Mr. Swanandan, has certainly helped. And, of course, in this sense, we have got a broader response to some of the questions raised earlier on, which I believe may have assisted members with a clearer understanding in this regard. But allow me to let you respond. Some of the points of comments, I'm sure you appreciate that. There are one or two other issues raised.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to respond to the question from the back, Honorable Smith, regarding the 1958, it's our concern, Madam Chair, is that the amendments commence from 1958. Our position is that the protection should be in perpetuity. As long as the IK is eligible for protection, it needs to be protected. So we're not in support of the 1958. We're in support of perpetuity, and that was the comment was made by Professor Saliti. To come back to the Honorable Mabasa, sorry. Unfortunately, sir, your comments fall within the ambit of the biodiversity regulations. Previously, when the biodiversity regulations were promulgated, benefit sharing agreements had to be drafted at the time of disclosure. So when a traditional healer disclosed the information to a researcher, he had to enter into a benefit sharing agreement and a material transfer agreement. Unfortunately, the regulations was amended, and it made two significant amendments. One, it allowed for an individual to claim intellectual property right, and secondly, the benefit sharing agreements only kicked in at the time of commercialization, and the time of commercialization is defined as when the applicant applies for IP protection. And in terms, if you applied for a provisional protection, then the commercialization phase. So now the regulations in terms of the Bible speaking that you're talking of
and the validation that you speaking of, that validation is done at a research institution.
Yeah, maybe just a couple of items on the broader issues, whether we are speaking in double speak, supporting the DTI and then the sui generis. The country needs both. They cover different issues. You cannot do without the conventional intellectual property rights. And the amendments done in 2005 and some of the amendments that are being driven now is to seal the gaps that are there in the IP, the conventional IP. However, they fall short of our comprehensive protection of indigenous knowledge and hence the necessity of a sui generis to complement the conventional IP regime. So we're not speaking in double tongues. We support our colleagues, but also noting what needs to be done. The other issue on the consultation, it is indeed important that we do go to the grassroots. This past week, I've been to Murumeng. I've been to negotiate with communities from Nkandla. And we brought people from Mushlab Walingana who were speaking yesterday in Devon on the national record system. So we are reaching out in terms of the communities so that the public awareness and their rights are properly understood. With you, we can do more, and we'll try to do more in that area because we see ourselves as mainly promoting the rights of knowledge holders. We also doing the same in the scientific community because it's a two-way effort. Scientists have been brought together under a bioprospecting platform so that they can understand the needs of the communities so that they do not continue to exploit that knowledge. So we are doing quite a lot in that area. And maybe finally, the issues of empowering communities are integral to the education that they receive. Our initial starting point has been to provide a Bachelor of Indigenous Knowledge Systems, which we have registered with SAQUA. We hopefully are going to begin to roll it in February next year at the University of Northwest. In that system, we hope them to train teachers in indigenous knowledge. So when they get back into the classroom, they will understand what it is. But we also intend to train cutting-edge researchers up to PhDs in that area. So we are confident that with the initiatives that we've started, we'll go a long way. We also realize that we cannot always speak about formal Western education. So the accreditation and certification system is to attend to the knowledge systems of our people and how they educate other people and recognize that. Set up standards for them. Even within traditional healers, there are different classification of traditional healers, specialization of traditional healers. Instead of just treating them as one category, how do we begin to create a system that we can recognize. So this process has started. The key speakers were traditional healers and traditional leaders. And so we are very thankful that you raised the question. Maybe just gives us an opportunity to say, in this area, we have also opened a front for the DST. Thank you.
Honorable Dunjwa, just to follow up on a matter of interest. Can somebody who is not an educator apply and be part of the process? Because I hear you say you are going to train teachers. So my question, my interest is if somebody is not an educator, will you be able to take people from outside that scope?
Yesterday, we had about 400 learners from primary school to secondary school at the IKS Expo, and they were very keen to learn more about enrolling. So we're beginning the campaign to get to them to enroll for that. It's an open, there are about six qualifications under that. they will be in management of environment, in food security. So we have taken five different areas. So it's not only for teachers. It's a Bachelor of Indigenous Knowledge, then majors. It's a professional degree, 4 years. 1 year is in the field at the community level, so that we do not train armchair IKS people. They go and work in the community. Thank you.
Now, I think that's very helpful, and I've no doubt you would want to share more with us. Perhaps this is a moment just to indicate that while there are only a couple of the science and technology members with us, this is because a couple of others are in, I'm not sure if it's Durban or where, but it's in KZN at this Indigenous Knowledge. Not sure if it's an expo, but it certainly is a conference or workshop of that nature. And we have a similar problem on our side with one overseas and two other members with family members in intensive care and so on. So obviously, you know, they're tending to family matters and so on. But, you know, members, first of all, to the team on my left, Dr. Saletis, Sawandan, of the National Indigenous Knowledge Systems Office, one really sees this as a complementarity in one sense of the word. There will obviously be different approaches to these issues, which we expect on the executive side is, if you like, finalized at the cabinet level before it comes, as it were, finally to the legislature. However, it doesn't preclude us exploring your experiences and knowledge, but keeping in mind how we would approach what we hear. It's the same point about what Nedlac was saying about draft bills and the like and so on. When we do come to the bill in question, what bill are we talking about? This is the bill that is tabled before us that we are required to amend. But it is useful to get, if you like, the background to what led to this final bill, because, yes, it was here before this committee and this term, and we cannot ignore that process either. But the more I indicated here that we truly are finding ourselves faced with more challenges than we expected. Perhaps it's that cliche which says, or reminds one of the cliche which says, the more you learn, the more you know that, well, the less you, that you know very little about everything. So, yes, it's a good idea to get more informed, but it also puts a perspective on your own knowledge, as it were, and to the complexity of what you are facing. And just to share a little with you, there's one of the organizations we met with was the organization, the International Center for Trade and Sustainable Development. Of course, we met with WIPO and the WTO, etc. But we found some of the people within that particular institution possibly could prove quite valuable to the committee and so on. So, yes, we will tomorrow be able to brief you more specifically on how we believe the program needs to be adjusted to accommodate these areas. But there are many other things that I know the DDG, Zodwen too, would also be aware of that may require us to tackle, you know, and fit into the program. Some of the issues coming up that you may have seen in the press, which we tackled under IPEP, you know, the Kumba and Essela Mittal areas and the whole impact on the IPAP and the developmental approach here and there. Now, that wasn't really in the program per se, so this is why I say we may need to review our current program in the light of this. But rather than give specific dates, we always work with our department to ascertain whether or not it suits them to come on certain days. And when I say it suits them, we don't want to call them urgently to a meeting when they are already have a prior engagement overseas. You know, that is not our approach to the matter at all. Suffice to say that we will keep you briefed tomorrow in this regard. I'm not sure if at this point the DDG just wants to have a final comment on the matter before I begin to adjourn the committee.
Thank you, Chair, and thanks to the honourable members. I think the only thing that is left for us to say, Chair, is just to thank you and the committee for giving us an opportunity to interact on these matters. And as a department, we accept the complexity of this. And I think from the experience of this committee, the matters that we deal with in the department are not easy. They're always complex matters, and by their nature, they affect a whole lot of people. So there are a lot of people that get to have an interest in these matters because our area of law cuts across each and every sector of the economy, each and every sector in the social set. And so we appreciate the issues that have been raised. And we've noted them very carefully, Chair, that when we come back, we will address them again in more detail, because I think in our initial presentations, we did allude to some of these things that are coming up here, and we have also indicated how, as a department, we intend to address them, and we would obviously appreciate if the committee could give us that opportunity. But the one thing here that I think is important for us to just reiterate again in the approach that the committee should take, obviously looking at the comments that are made by our colleagues from DST, is that we both have a particular mandate, a specific mandate emanating from the IK policy that Cabinet approved. And this policy is not ambiguous. It's very specific. Each of these departments have got a role, and I think Professor Siliti has alluded to those areas in terms of what is it that we are responsible for. And as a Department of Trade and Industry, we take the lead in regard to any matter that has to do with IP. And to the extent that the matters that we're dealing with here have got to do with exploitation, commercialization of the rights of certain sectors of the public, or of certain individuals in the public or certain communities, the department is within its rights, obviously, to propose how they should be protected. And I think such a process, obviously, when we get to Parliament, is enriched through a consultation that we go through. And I must also just confirm that we have consulted fully with the DST, and also through the Cabinet process. The Minister participated in that, and the comments were taken on board. And I think as we come through Parliament and articulate on some of those issues that have been raised by the various stakeholders, as well as DST as a department, we will then be in a position to apprise the committee on those issues. The other aspect, Chair, that I think is important for us to also note, which we've mentioned before when we presented to this committee, is the need for alignment of our laws. And I think and the complexity of the IP laws is also created, can I say it's perpetuated by the manner in which these aspects are dealt with in legislation, where we've got various pieces that are actually within the same set, but are dealt with in different pieces of legislation, and they are linked with certain other legislation that is implemented by other departments, but there isn't a specific policy framework that aligns it to ensure coordination and coherence. And as we talk about those people that we're saying that most of whom may be illiterate, you know, this fragmentation even makes it worse for them. You know, the intentions may be very good, but then in the manner in which we present these things to the public, if it's not even user-friendly, it's unthinkable how they'll even start digesting it. So that is the area which we have also started a process on to
to say we would like to align. Yes, we agree now in terms of the principles to protect and all of that, but how do we make sure that these areas are actually even digestible, you know, understood, and so that people can start benefiting from them? And IP is one of those areas which I think sometimes deliberately from certain areas, you know, of the public is made to be very complex when actually it's not. I think if we recall some of the statements that were made by Professor Conradi in his presentation, he was trying to allude to exactly that, that sometimes these things are deliberately made complex when actually they could be explained in a very simple manner. And we appreciate GST for that area, you know, in terms of the awareness raising and also, you know, institutionalizing, you know, the education on IK, you know, through a formal system. I think that's where we want to go as a country. And also, one thing that we mentioned here is also the area of innovation funds, in a sense, or innovation support, where in fact you can still even start encouraging, you know, the creativity and development of these things, because it doesn't stop here. And it's said that every time when we speak about traditional knowledge or indigenous knowledge, it's as if it's static, you know, communities don't grow, they don't evolve. It's like we're talking about things that are old, that primitive and all of that. And we've made that clear as a department that that's not what we're talking about. And just to also bring to the attention of the committee again that the issue around retrospectivity has been raised throughout all our consultations. But as a department, we obviously do not want to really dwell on it because we have considered the aspects of constitutionality. We are also governed by the constitution of the country. And the constitution directs us very clearly in terms of the extent to which existing rights could be interfered with. And we also move from the presumptions that are made in law to say, when you make the law, you legislate for the future. However, we know that Parliament has previously legislated where there is a need for the law to take effect from a particular period in time, even if it's backwards. So that is in the discretion of Parliament, having considered the areas that have been raised by the stakeholders. And I think Parliament will have an opportunity to hear the stakeholders that are talking about that aspect. But as a department, we have agreed also in the NETLEC process that to the extent that we're talking retrospectivity, this is the approach that we'll agree with, and it's outlined in our agreements in the NETLEC report. And so we would not open up that area a lot, but I think it's important to say to the committee there are certain principles around it, but Parliament is not precluded from deliberating on it and making a decision that Parliament thinks it's just for the public. And as we take longer, I think, to legislate to protect IK, I think the momentum for retrospectivity is also going to mount. I think Parliament must also acknowledge the fact that when you are processing legislation, other people will see an opportunity to start, even other things that were not even thinking about this. While if they see an opportunity, they'll go and now patent and all of that just before the Act comes into force, if it actually, if Parliament decides on legislating on this matter. So that also will also create the momentum for that argument as well, because it's really about the redress mechanism, you know, for fairness purposes. I think those are the principles that the Parliament would have to look at when they look at this bill, to say, you know, the fairness principles, if you were to apply them, does this warrant a retrospectivity? And those are the things that will leave to the hands of Parliament, but obviously we'll guide to the extent that as the department we are able to guide where we can, and that Parliament also is free to hear the other stakeholders in regards to this matter. Finally, Chair, I just want to also say that the issue around databases, we alluded to it, and I think we will all continue to engage with DST so that it is very clear that we are not confusing the public when we refer to databases. I think it's an issue of terminology that we need to clarify so that when we communicate
whether in legislation or when you communicate to the public, it's understood what a database is. But a database is not necessarily something that is going to just collect IK and put it in the public space for people to exploit. And also, we must distinguish between a database that is created through a recording process of registering an IP, for instance, if IK is now agreed to be a part of an IP system, then there would obviously be a process of registering it. And then after registering it, having it protected as a result. And then when it's protected, then it will sit in a database where we can bounce against to check if anybody comes and registers something. So I think the terminology is the one that might be confusing, but I think the committee must know that we are not confused among ourselves in terms of what we are talking about and what is intended, but that we will actually just make sure that we bounce our heads together as well to say what terminology can we use so that we don't confuse the public. And we appreciate also the process that DST has already started of collecting that information. So that's all I just wanted to talk to, and I'm not going to use the opportunity today to try and address some of the questions of the members, because this is not our space today. We're just making this input just to enrich the process of the committee. And thanks very much, Chair, again, for giving us the opportunity.
Thank you to all of you, both teams here, in fact, everyone present, especially, of course, our own members of the committee and the members of Science and Technology. If I can just indicate, members, I know that the committee secretary would like to, Mr. Hermans, just share one or two things with us along the lines of invitations and the rest that he may want to distribute and reason why, and also the time for tomorrow's meeting, the purpose and the venue. And certainly to indicate to DTI to Science and Technology Portfolio Committee through the WIP, that it is our earnest intention to communicate with you regularly and keep you right in the loop. And of course, I know if the chair was present, he would have shared and co-chaired this particular session with ourselves. Thank you very much. But just at this point, if we can hand over to Mr. Hermans. But before I do that, I would like to ask Zodwood just to wait for me before we actually leave the room. Thank you.
Just with regard to the program tomorrow, we're starting at 9:00 in the same venue, room V454. We are meeting with the Commission on Language and them committee, that long committee, on the issue of, we requested at the last meeting, there was a request for a briefing on the issue of community. They can also assist with a definition and what their view would be on such language, religion, linguistics, community commission on that. Then on the issue of the invitation, I gave all members who present a copy of the invitation from the Southern African Federation Against Copyright Theft. They're having a cocktail this evening and requesting the presence of members at this cocktail this evening. Thank you.
No, Chair, it was, I just wanted to, I didn't pick it up, sorry for that, the venue. For the cocktail, is here before you. Oh, same.
Thank you.